Before we start this episode of CFD's Podcast for Good, let's give a little shout out to our presenting sponsor, WSECU. WSECU has been a part of the community since 1957 and has been supporting the CFD in a big way since 2011. Thanks to them, we were able to bring you spectacular events and promotions like the Masquerade Ball, Golf for Veterans Tournament, and our incredible First Week to Give, which has been responsible for raising tens of thousands of dollars in donations to charities throughout our community. For more on how WSECU serves charities throughout our community, visit www.wsecu.org/community. And of course, visit our website to find out more about our incredible partnership with WSECU. And now, here's the show.
I'm laughing while I eat my salad.
Super fresh.
Super fresh salad.
Girl, you know it's fresh.
You hit the whole octave range,
you know,
there. That's awesome.
I really love 80s and 90s R&B and rap. Yeah. And like, I can't.
Best 90s R&B band, go.
Best 90s go. R&B. We're talking R&B, not like any kind of rap.
Yeah, all. Yeah.
Well, I mean, if you're going R&B, I'm going to have to go SWV.
Oh, SWV. Okay.
Sisters with Voices.
Okay. I'm New Edition.
Oh, nice.
New Edition. Yeah, I mean, you know, East Coast family.
East Coast.
Shout out to Jerrica Ferguson. And her East Coast family.
There you go.
Awesome. All right, folks. Welcome to Season 3, Episode 13. It is April. And April is actually Autism Awareness Month.
Fact.
So you know how we like to do those sort of things when we have a month or a theme that kind of coincides with charities that have a need, we hit on that. So that's what we're doing today. My name is Philip Kerrigan. I am the program manager for the Washington State Combined Fund Drive. This is, as always,
Heather Lucas, the fiscal and policy coordinator for the Combined Fund Drive.
That's right. And this is Podcast for Good.
Yeah.
And we are talking to Lucine Drake, the co-founder and president of the Lumen Academy. Very inspirational stuff from Lucine. With regards to how she started the academy, and what it does, the service it provides to kids with neurological disorders, I guess you would kind of say, right?
Yeah.
And so specifically autism, because her daughter was autistic, and that kind of got her motivated into attempting to create a school where someone like her daughter could thrive and actually become a contributing member of society.
I gotta tell you, like, I love those kind of stories where somebody is just like, la la la, living
super
my
cool
life, doing my thing. Oh no, this problem happens. I'm gonna do something about it.
Yeah, it's the coolest thing. My favorite, I mean, all of our guests are my favorite guests.
Hashtag I love you all.
Yes, but my favorite, guests are always the ones who you go one level below and you ask like, what's your level of experience in development and charity world? And they go zero, and you're like, that's fantastic, because it's exactly like you said. She had no experience in the charitable world, let alone in the creating of a school
education field.
And she created this really neat academy that that helps a bunch of kids. One of the things you'll hear her talk about is it's one-on-one. The ratio is 1-to-1.
Yeah, yeah.
That's insane.
That is insane. You don't ever see anything like that in the public school system.
No, you could never. It would cost us $1 trillion to do. Really interesting conversation about autism in general, a mysterious sort of disorder still for a lot of folks.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we're having this huge conversation now about what even causes it, and there are people who actually believe that, vaccines cause it.
Yeah.
So, it's definitely a very, very sort of, there's a whole like shroud of sort of mystery around this particular disease. It has to do with the brain, and we don't know much about that.
Yeah, that's one of those terrible things. Like, since the brain is so unknown, I mean, there could be so many things happening within a person's brain that get recognized as other things, misdiagnosed.
Yeah. Well, that was what was kind of neat, too. You asked her a question about about, like, can a person walk around with autism and not even be diagnosed?
Yeah.
When I first saw that question, I was like, no, of course not.
You're like, that's a stupid question.
That's a dumb question. Why'd you even write that down, Lucas? But then she talked about it, how there are lots of people who walk around.
Vindicated.
All right, whatever. Don't get too big of a head.
Too late.
Before we dive into the interview with Lucene, you do have, as always, a question of the pod.
I do. And this one was one of those questions that, like, I kind of started down a rabbit hole. So, okay. So I was thinking, okay, well, autism is, you know, there are a lot of behaviors that come along with somebody who is autistic.
Yes.
Things that someone who is not autistic doesn't experience, right?
Yeah.
So I started thinking about behaviors and, you know, how some people are just terrible. And then,
sure,
absolutely. You know. Standard stuff.
You know, the usual, humans are terrible.
Humans are terrible. Go animals. So it made me wonder, habits. What's your worst habit? What's your worst behavior? What's the worst thing that you typically do?
Is eating a bad habit? Because I feel like I do far too much of that.
Well, you do have to do it to live.
That's true. Good point.
So, I mean, eating, the breathing, the sleeping.
Copious amounts of fat, but yeah.
But you love it.
But I do.
Yeah.
Bacon is delicious.
Yeah.
No, I would say my worst habit is being late.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the reason why I call it a habit is because I feel like a habit is something that even sometimes you recognize and want to break, but you still can't do it.
Like you're bound by it.
You're almost pathological, and you don't it's like a reflex, like a reflexive thing. So it's one of the things that, like, is a goal of mine over like the next year, is to try and be more on time.
Did you say years? The next year or next years?
Next year.
Okay, okay. I was like, you're going to extend this out.
Well, I mean, I want
20 years from now, you're still going to be late everywhere you go?
What I'd like to do is be, I'm 10 minutes late now. I'd like to be 9 at the end of the year.
Nice.
8 after that. And then in 10 years, I'll be on time.
And then maybe we'll see.
Yeah. But, you know, I mean, I would like, that was one of those things where it, I know that sometimes as a person who, like, for people who are on time and see people who come in late, yes, there are people who are just disrespectful jerks and they don't have an appreciation for your time.
Yeah.
I'm not one of those people. I'm very pissed off as I'm driving to the place I'm going that I'm already late. I'm upset at myself for being late. So so there are people like me out there too who do actually respect your time. We're very sorry. It's a built-in habit over time.
Yeah.
So that I guess would be my number one.
People still like you.
Thank you. Thank you, Heather.
Yeah, you're welcome.
How about yourself? Bad habit.
Well, you know, I thought maybe it'd be something disgusting.
Yeah, I was expecting that.
Yeah, I'm a disgusting creature.
Yes, you're a disgusting person.
But really, I kind of feel like my worst habit is probably impatience.
Oh,
I am an impatient SOB. Like I cannot sometimes function and listen to certain things or take the time to do certain things. Like, I need it now.
Yeah.
I need this to be done.
Yeah.
Why isn't it done now?
Right.
Let's figure this out. I gotta go. Like, get out of my face.
Yeah.
Ah, blah, blah, blah. I need it to move.
Yeah. And I would say that I would classify that as a genuine habit, because the thing about it is you recognize that's not what you want.
I don't.
To do. Mm-mm. It just, you fall into it.
Yeah. I don't mean to cut you off in conversation, but I need you to stop talking.
Right. Exactly. It's really true. Like, I think that, like, sometimes those become so ingrained over time that they are habits.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you really do have to actually be conscious, like, all right, I gotta be more patient.
Yeah. Just take a breath here.
Or you go like, or I go like, man, I really, you know, if I'm going to do it, I got to leave 10 minutes more earlier, right? And you really genuinely have to, like, try and crack it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, I kind of circling back to autism, and this is actually a sneaky good question.
Boom.
Yeah. With regards to autism, is because I think people sometimes mistake somebody who's autistic doing a certain thing a certain way as a bad habit.
Yeah.
Right? And the reality is have we looked into it enough to where maybe they have those habits for a reason?
Yeah, like they have a neurological thing happening, and that's why they do what they do.
Yeah, I remember when I was going to college, one of the things that the Evergreen State College has a really...
Fighting Gooey Ducks.
Go Fighting Gooey Ducks. One of the things they have that's really a great program is they partner with local elementary schools as part of your student teaching. And that was where I was going to go. That was my plan.
You were going to be a student teacher or just an elementary school teacher?
I was going to be
an
elementary school teacher.
Oh, Phyllis.
Yes, I know.
That's adorable.
Thank you. And so they put our a class of like 20 into various classrooms at Garfield.
Okay.
And one of the classrooms that was available was ECAP, and so they put me in the ECAP class.
Okay.
For those who don't know necessarily what ECAP is, it's emotional and sort of neurological and mental like disorders.
Okay.
Right? So it is autistic kids. It is kids who come from abusive homes, those sort of things, who have ADD, severe ADD, things like that. So coming into that world, not having been around it, it was an intimidating experience to start. And I remember meeting this one kid in particular. His name was Ben. I'll never forget. His name was Ben, and he was heavily autistic. Like he was pretty autistic. He was pretty, you know, pretty high.
Was he like nonverbal or
no? He was verbal.
Okay.
But he was like the what you do see sometimes in pop culture. He would repeat the same thing over and over again, or he'd want to do the same activity all the time. Like the activity that pleased him was what he wanted to do.
Sure.
And if anything broke out of that, he found himself angry, not like crazy angry, but he found himself agitated.
Sure.
Right. And so I don't know why, but me and this kid ended up having a connection from the beginning. Mm-hmm. Like every time I'd come in, he'd make me put my stuff away, and then we'd go to the kitchen, and then we'd play a certain way, and everything would be the same.
Yeah.
And then he would make me sit with him at the circle time.
Uh-huh.
And I remember like his mom comes in one time. Okay. I've been in the class now for 5 weeks, right? Mm-hmm. So 2 days a week for 5 weeks I've been in the class. So he and I have a fairly good rapport.
Yeah.
All the parents are picking up the children, and in comes his mom, who never picks him up. It was always like a father. It was always like the father or grandmother. I think she worked, and so she couldn't come as much.
Sure.
And so here she comes. It's like one of the first times she's ever been in there. And so the teacher calls Ben, go ahead and grab your backpack, and you know, go ahead and join your mom. So he gets up, he grabs his backpack, he turns around, and he gives me a hug.
Okay.
So I give him a hug, and I'm like, oh, okay, I'll see you later, Ben. And I look up at his mom, and she's like crying.
Oh.
And I was like, oh, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to, you know, blah blah blah. She's like, no, he doesn't hug anybody.
Yeah.
Like he doesn't hug anybody but people that he likes and knows.
Oh.
And you're like the first person in here that he's done that to. And I remember being like, I'm blown away by all of this.
Totally.
Like, how is it possible that your very sweet son, like, cannot make those connections with other people, you know? And that was my first interaction with autism 10, 15 years ago.
Yeah.
To be honest, after that, you know, you don't give it much thought. You just know that these kids might be different.
Yeah.
And how do you address that stuff?
Yeah.
So that was a really cool conversation with Lucene. So we won't take up any more of your time. I won't blather on about my, college experience.
That's another podcast.
Yes, it is another podcast. Yeah. Go fight and gooey ducks. so anyway, here is our conversation with Lucene, the co-founder and president of the Lumen Academy. All right. We are joined on the show by Lucene Drake. She's the co-founder and president of the Lumen Academy. Lucene, thanks for coming on the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
So can you talk a little bit about the history of the Lumen Academy and what it is you do for the community?
Certainly. Lumen Academy started because I was looking for an education for my daughter. We received her diagnosis of autism when she was 4 years old, and around that time we needed to think ahead for what her education would look like from kindergarten forward, and we discovered that we had very limited options. So the public school district is required by law to provide an education to special needs children.
Mm-hmm.
Private schools are not required. They are under no obligation. And the public school had recommended that we basically put our child in a school half an hour away from our home school.
Wow.
Because of her diagnosis.
Yeah.
We were surprised that we were, in this day and age, facing this kind of segregation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it didn't feel comfortable to me that children were being placed in a classroom because of this diagnosis with no acknowledgement of kind of their ability.
Yeah.
So it was concerning, and I looked into one other school that looked like it might be accepting of my daughter, and I was very clear from the get-go of her diagnosis, and they seemed interested, and then we received a letter of rejection, and
okay.
they made it very clear that they didn't feel comfortable with her differences.
Wow.
And so one day I went over this rejection letter with my daughter, who we had prepared her to go to this school, and she didn't bat an eye, and she said, and this time she was just starting to communicate with us. She had been nonverbal.
Okay.
Wow.
And she said, "That's okay, Mommy.
Wow.
You are going to be the president of the school for me."
Oh, wow. Oh, wow.
So, I had goosebumps. The hair on the back of my neck was raised. I just had certainly never imagined that that was what was going to happen. And I thought, well, that's cute, but also strangely profound.
Yeah.
About 2 days later, I shared the rejection letter with my daughter's therapist, her BCBA, or board certified behavior analyst.
Uh-huh.
And we were both just in tears on the floor trying to figure out what do we do, not only for my daughter, but so many of these children who do not have an option for an appropriate education. And we just decided we're going to have to come up with our own solution. And that day, it was March 2 years ago in 2017, we made the decision we are starting Lumen Academy.
Wow.
And so what we do for the community is we are providing an education, not just an accommodation, but we've built a school from the ground up based on these children's neural differences. So we provide an education for children who are neurodiverse, so children with autism, ADD, ADHD, gifted children. A lot of people don't know that. Giftedness is actually a neurodiversity, and twice exceptional children. So those are children who have a dual diagnosis, usually giftedness and then one of the others, such as autism or ADHD, who just generally are misfits in a general education setting.
Okay.
They may get some of their needs met, but because there's a differently wired brain, we want it to work with it. We want it to address their challenges and empower these children to also recognize their gifts and their potential.
Yeah.
I feel like that is something that is missing from a lot of their education options out there.
Yeah. Yeah.
So did you have any kind of background or history in an education field before you founded Lumen Academy or anything?
Zero.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
In neuroscience. And
okay.
This was way back when I had no idea I would be getting into the autism community.
Sure.
Sure.
I followed the work of Oliver Sacks and ended up studying neuroscience at Bryn Mawr and Oxford University. And then I ended up with this beautiful child who we learned was autistic. And at the time we received her diagnosis, I had no knowledge of autism aside from what I learned from the movie Rain Man.
Yeah, okay. Right.
So at that time I thought, okay, she will never be independent. She will never have relationships. She will not be able to get a job. I mean, I just made a lot of assumptions based on what I knew from that movie. And of course, over the course of the next several years, as I learned more and more about what autism really is, I just really grieved that I was put in a position to believe all of these things about my daughter that were not necessarily true.
Yeah.
That story, Rain Man, is actually based on a true story, but it's really a snapshot of a person with a lot of capability in an environment without the resources to support him properly.
Right.
You think about this individual who, at the time, they used the term idiot savant, who was incredibly gifted in math, if you remember from the film.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that kind of individual should be working at the CIA.
Yeah.
Such a gifting.
Yeah.
And even in today's climate, we see these children who have these, what we call hyperfocus, who are incredibly gifted in certain areas. And instead of continuing their education and supporting them in those.
Yeah.
You know, we get excited if we see an autistic adult who's working the cashier at Walmart, right? I feel like with that kind of math gifting, I mean, that person should be working in the CIA or the FBI. Or
Yeah.
They're capable of providing to our society.
Right.
So that's really one of the goals we have in mind. Part of our mission of Lumen Academy is really finding what the giftings are of each of our children and really supporting them
So you'd mentioned the phrase a little bit ago, but like when I was doing research for this episode, I came across that term twice, exceptionality, and I'd never heard that before. Can you talk a little bit more about any children who have twice exceptionality?
So that is my daughter, and also I've learned since my daughter's diagnosis, also myself.
Okay.
I'm also part of a community of women and some men who
some
learned
men.
Our own diagnosis as a result of our children's diagnoses.
Yeah. Okay.
So we never suspected on our own that we would have any neural differences.
Yeah.
But for myself, I recognized that during my daughter's evaluation and over the course of the first year of her therapy, what they were addressing were similar challenges that I had as a child.
Interesting.
And then I discovered a number of adults who also fell into this category of recognizing themselves and their children and then following up for an evaluation, then lo and behold, realizing, oh, this is who we are as well.
Okay. Yeah.
So for myself, that discovery was the autism and also the twice exceptionality, which, as I mentioned before, typically means we see both giftedness and what we consider more of a neural challenge, so autism or ADHD.
Okay.
So my daughter received a professional evaluation of her IQ. She was off the charts, not even on the chart, gifted.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a lot of children who fall into this category, and it's a very gray area.
Mm-hmm.
So I myself had questioned, well, what is the line that divides twice exceptionality from just giftedness?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And what's really interesting when I dug into that research, especially the neuroscience research, is that there really isn't very much difference. Mm. The difference that I find between the giftedness community and the neurodiverse community is that there's the people who are in the gifted community find too much stigma in the term autism.
Mm-hmm.
And don't
mm-hmm.
want anything to do with it.
Okay.
Yeah.
But you'll
yeah.
find among the gifted community, and especially, and I've spoken to experts in the field, those who fall in the what we would call profoundly gifted category mm-hmm. tend to have the same kinds of challenges as those that we would call the higher functioning or the Asperger's portion of the autism spectrum.
Mm-hmm.
So they have social skills deficits. They have sensory challenges. They just have different terms for them in the gifted community. But what's interesting is you get down to the neuroscience and the research. I mean, independent studies are demonstrating the very same thing for both the autistic community and the gifted community.
Awesome. So let's rewind a little bit. I want to ask some questions about the Lumen Academy. Where are you located? How many students do you serve?
Go ahead,
and
sorry.
What's your faculty like?
We are located in Woodinville.
Mm-hmm.
Our faculty is consists of registered behavior therapists,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
and our executive director is a board-certified behavior analyst.
Mm-hmm.
She's been working in this field for 20 years now.
Mm-hmm.
Before there was even any kind of certification around providing therapy for autistic individuals, she's been working with autistic kids. And our staff are registered behavior therapists. We have a one-to-one ratio between each child
wow.
and their therapist.
Wow.
And the BCBA basically has a caseload of eight children, each
mm-hmm.
one of our BCBAs. And this year we have one BCBA. Next year we'll have two.
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
So they assess each child in each academic subject as well as any behavioral concerns. And so the day is customized for each child.
Wow.
In regards to the proportion of academic programming versus behavior programming.
Sure, sure.
And also across subjects, so we don't really adhere to the idea that a child belongs to one grade because our children tend to exist on the extreme opposite ends of the continuum.
Mm-hmm,
we have
mm-hmm.
kids who might be two, three grades ahead on one subject, but then maybe they're a grade behind in another. Maybe they're at grade level in another.
Okay.
So we really want to meet them where they're at mm-hmm. and go at their pace.
Yeah.
And at the same time, we're embedding therapies throughout their day to assist them with things that usually become challenges in a general education setting to their success, which
mm-hmm.
is addressing executive function issues, intrinsic motivation, so that we're really making the environment somewhere they want to be and where they feel inspired to learn.
Excellent. Excellent.
So you talked a little bit about adults who have children who are Lumen Academy students and realizing, hey, I have some of these same things in my life that my child's experienced. it seems like a person could be autistic and not diagnosed. Can you speak to that at all?
Absolutely. And not so much with the parents at Lumen Academy as much as the autism community in general.
Okay.
In the Puget Sound area, we have a number of Facebook groups where we've met each other and we're communicating about the trials and tribulations and joys of being in this community.
Yeah.
And that's where I discovered a number of parents who also discovered on their own that they have this diagnosis.
Mm-hmm.
But I agree, there are many adults out there. And it's funny when you think about it. In the news, in the media, we hear so much of the rate of autism going up so mm-hmm. significantly. We're so concerned about where did this come from.
Mm-hmm.
And we forget that those children eventually become adults.
Yeah.
And so, you know, when I got my own diagnosis, that occurred to me that I just didn't think through. There are other people like my daughter, like me, at my age, but just don't have that awareness.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I know a couple of those individuals who don't know, or I'm watching people as they're making that discovery.
Yeah.
And we're just realizing either they've just found ways to cope and manage through their life, but they've never really felt like they hit stride, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Or we have some individuals who've really struggled because they didn't receive the support that could have been useful to them early on.
Yeah.
And so we've seen a huge rate of depression or suicide among people who just didn't understand why they didn't fit in, why they didn't understand social rules of engagement, and always felt like an outsider.
Yeah.
So there's been a lot of benefit, even at this later stage, to discover our diagnoses and to find out we're not alone. And just it explains so much about how our lives are what they are.
Yeah.
It's been a beautiful discovery also because I'm looking at people in my life, and when they're learning about my diagnosis, either they are able to say, oh my goodness, that makes so much sense, right? My sister, when I told her my diagnosis, didn't bat an eye and said, that makes so much sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But then it's also this beautiful surprise for people who wouldn't anticipate it, right? We hear a lot of, you know, look autistic. And so I'm glad to have that conversation. And it's kind of a game changer to help people understand, well, there isn't a look to autism.
Yeah.
The spectrum is wide. And, you know, you can have people who are able to articulate. You have people who have some social skills. And that's something else I should mention, is that there is a discrepancy in what autism looks like between men and women, girls and boys. And this is part of the reason why the rate of diagnosis has jumped very recently. We learned that autism looks different in girls and women than it does for boys and men.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, much like heart attacks, yeah.
Yes, exactly. Well, a number of things, right, where most of the research has been done with the boys and the men.
Mm-hmm.
But very recently, I want to say in the past 5 years, we've learned that the social intelligence of a female autistic is similar to that of a neurotypical male. And so when evaluators were looking at the autistic female, they were expecting to see similar qualities as the autistic male.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But girls more likely are going to demonstrate that they want relationships, or that they have an awareness or discomfort of, they feel that people have an expectation of them that they cannot meet.
Mm-hmm.
They have an understanding that there are rules that they cannot grasp. And that's less likely for the males, where it's just all going over their head.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so when evaluators would see that, well, they have a desire to have that relationship, then they cannot be autistic, but that's not true. They still do not understand. They don't have an intrinsic understanding of the rules of engagement that most people have.
Yeah.
Sure. So you brought it up, so I'm just going to talk about it. there is a lot of talk about vaccines causing autism. And I think that this tends to simplify this conversation a bit too much. Can you talk a little bit about some of the root causes that have been discovered to kind of clarify exactly kind of what this conversation should really be about?
Yeah. So the paradigm of neurodiversity is that we have been a part of human society for all time, or close to all time.
Mm-hmm.
And we look at individuals throughout history who mm-hmm. made the greatest innovations and discoveries in science and engineering. And we look at any record that we have of their behavior, and we see these same tendencies that we can identify as being autistic.
Right.
So Henry Cavendish is one of those examples. Albert Einstein.
Yes.
Bill Gates. Yeah. Is known to have Asperger's. Asperger's is a part of the autism spectrum.
Yeah. Yeah.
So Temple Grandin. My father is a textbook example of someone with Asperger's, mm-hmm. and we did 23andMe. He got a call from some institute in Jerusalem because his DNA belongs to one of the oldest haplogroups in history.
Mm.
So, I mean, what does that? I don't. That's an anecdotal aside, but still, it tells me that we've been around for a very long time.
Yeah.
And it's just our impression as a society towards these differences has changed over time.
Yeah.
I'm hoping we're getting to a place of acceptance. When it comes to the vaccines, my belief is this, that these neural differences do cause a different physiology.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
most of the time, it looks like a more fragile physiology.
So okay.
You see similar ailments among the autism population. We tend to have issues with digestion. We tend to have issues with our immune system. So you'll see a lot of dietary differences and issues with detoxification that don't occur as often in the neurotypical population.
Okay.
So my stance is this. My belief is that I don't think vaccines cause autism.
Mm-hmm.
I think vaccines are inappropriate for the autism community.
Oh.
I believe that we are immune compromised. So any of the adjuvants or preservatives that are put in vaccines that look to, they seem to be fine for the general population, they do cause issues in the autistic individual. So I believe those changes that parents are seeing when their child is 2 or 3 and they've just had a vaccine is due to side effects that are going to happen for their child. And the question that I want to see answered is, are autistic individuals or neurodiverse individuals, do they have a higher propensity to suffer side effects from the vaccines? And if so, then they need to be classified as immune compromised, and they should probably, either we need to consider a different schedule for them, or we need to delay them, or maybe they do not receive them at all.
Okay. That makes sense. I mean, and I understand sometimes it's people struggling to try and find meaning in an autism diagnosis, but that certainly does make sense that the actual autism already exists within the person, and a vaccine creates these side effects that maybe a person could project as, well, the vaccine caused it.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, for a number of these children, you're not going to see the behavioral qualities about them that you would define as autistic until a little bit later on. I would say I didn't notice those differences in my daughter until around the time she was 2 years of age.
Okay.
Well, 2 years of age is when children get a number of vaccines.
Yeah.
And so all of a sudden you see that turn, and you may not have known that your child was autistic before. And again, I feel like some parents are going to have a really tough time hearing that, because we still live in a society where autism just has so much stigma behind it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm seeing a lot of parents who see differences in their children but are really weary of getting an evaluation and receiving that diagnosis because of what I went through when I received my daughter's diagnosis.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So we really want to change the story that there shouldn't be a stigma around autism. It's just a differently wired brain.
Sure, yeah.
And so many of the challenges that we have with that diagnosis have to do with how we view that diagnosis and the types of resources and availability of resources to assist that diagnosis. But otherwise, we have individuals who have a lot of potential and a lot of gifting that deserve to be recognized by society. Coming back to our school, that's our viewpoint, and that's what we want to do. That's what we want to accomplish for our students, is to give them that ability to succeed, to realize their highest potential in society.
So you talked a little bit about resources. As far as resources go in public schools, do you think that teachers in our state have the tools or the training to identify students who are experiencing any kind of behavior that shows that they have autism?
Absolutely not.
Okay.
And not just for autism, but for any special needs.
Yeah.
I mean, you're aware that education in our state has been severely underfunded for a long time.
Right.
Yeah.
Now we're finally talking about funding that has been underfunded. But that underfunding funding for special needs was the first to go. And
right.
I don't know if you're aware, but our state has illegally placed a cap on the percentage of special needs students in each district that would receive services.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. So no more than 13.5% of the student population of any district would receive services. And beyond that, well, I guess you're out of luck.
Wow. So you have to go figure out another place to go.
Admits this.
Wow.
Yes. Yeah. So, no, I mean, even for the teachers who know what they're saying and are well-meaning, they're not receiving the training.
Sure.
I think we've had a bill this past session that we're trying to mandate training for special needs.
Right, right.
But, I mean, we're seeing the results of that. We have kids who are being unnecessarily restrained or improperly restrained, and it's been leading to severe injury and to post-traumatic stress for these children.
Yes.
Or we're seeing children who are not getting the proper evaluation.
Yeah.
And that can be either the school districts are not evaluating them properly, or they're weary of evaluating them because they know that means they're going to have to provide services that they might not have the money for.
Yeah.
And
then
we have teachers who are in these classrooms, don't have sufficient training for special needs. And then now they have children who have these needs that need more attention. And are they getting the one-to-one aid that that child deserves or that teacher deserves?
Right. Yeah, that's hard to say. Yeah, absolutely. So let's say someone hears this podcast and wants to start giving to the Lumen Academy. Can you talk about what donations do for your organization?
Donations run our organization. We are entirely run. We have a very low tuition, which we wanted to make our program accessible to as many families as possible.
Sure.
We're providing basically a private tutor for each one of our children.
Right.
We're providing all the basic therapies that they would need during the school day, which frees up their evening so that families can just be families instead of driving around and trying to get to all these other therapies.
Yeah.
But our donations so far have paid for the curriculum for our students, for all of our lab equipment, for their technology, for, you know, things as simple as car seats, so that we can get them out of the facility. We have life skills outings on a weekly basis, so we can work with our kids on interaction within the community, so we can work on their social skills. And we're also taking the opportunity to inform the community about who our students are and how to interact with them. We believe that has to go both ways. We need our community to take responsibility for welcoming our children despite their differences, too. We need an understanding there.
Yeah.
Excellent. Excellent.
So do you have any upcoming events or programs you'd like to highlight?
We do. We have a very fun spring fundraiser, all ages, family friendly, called hashtag Hogwarts at Lumen. That's a
pretty fun that's awesome.
Carnival. It's taking place on May 18th from 1 to 4 p.m.
Okay.
And we'd love to see people there. We have tickets for purchase on Eventbrite. If they look up Hogwarts at Lumen, they can find us there.
Right on.
And we'll have a fall event, a wine tasting, since we're here in Woodinville among all of the lovely
rooms.
Yeah.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, Lucine, thank you so much for coming on the podcast and talking about this very neat academy that you've put together for kids who really need the assistance and can be contributing members to society if people just gave them the opportunity.
Exactly. Awesome. Well, thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Thanks a lot. All right, so that was our conversation with Lucine Drake, the co-founder and president of Lumen Academy. Pretty cool conversation surrounding that. Pretty inspirational stuff with her daughter as well. Ms. Lucas, I'm sure you've got mountains of facts and figures.
I do.
When it comes to autism.
I do.
Yes.
But I'm not going to pour all of the mountains onto you.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great.
I'm gonna save
Thanks.
You a little bit.
All right. Appreciate that.
So, So we talked a little bit about like types of autism with Lucine, but can you name two types of autism?
Oh boy. Asperger's, right?
Yeah.
And then, man, like I can just name autism? I don't know.
Technically, yeah. Okay. Yeah. So, so there's really like three types. Okay. And there used to be four types of autism, but a couple years ago, there was this decision, like the medical community was like, with these four different types of autism, we feel like we're missing people and putting them into a category of treatment that they shouldn't be in.
Okay.
Or saying, you know, you're suffering from an autism that is Asperger's when actually it's more like a pervasive development disorder.
Oh, boy. So that sounds terrible.
I know it does. But it is a type of autism, pervasive development disorder, or not otherwise specified. So like that's one of those things they kind of just mash together to say if you don't fit in the Asperger's category or just like that autistic disorder, the classic autism, then you might be someone who is pervasive development disorder.
Okay.
So they got rid of that to help out with that whole figuring out treatment options and all of that. Then there's the whole idea of communication. Like people who have autism communicate differently because they're wired differently.
Yes.
So how much, as far as a spoken language, I know some trivia here. So if you're talking about nonverbal autism.
Okay.
What do you think percentage wise people with autism have who are nonverbal? Nonverbal percent.
The nonverbal percentage of people who are autistic.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to say it's 20%.
You're close. It's a little higher.
Okay.
It's about a third. So we're talking 33%. Like 33.
Wow. Yeah. That's actually pretty high.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. So a third of them are nonverbal.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And then children and adults with autism, they have difficulty with communication. So like nonverbal or verbal.
Yeah.
But then they'll do other things where it might seem to someone who is not autistic, like, are you being rude? Are you being weird? What are you doing? So it's kind of like, in a way, like tics from, what is it called?
Tourette's?
There you go.
Yeah.
Yeah. So like stuff like gestures.
Yeah.
They might have like facial tics or like things that they do.
Right.
They can't make eye contact. They're really uncomfortable making eye contact.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And then facial expressions.
Yeah.
They might not react in the way that is societally standard. Right.
Yeah.
And then they can also have difficulties doing other things like recognizing emotions within other people.
Okay. Okay.
And then recognizing their own emotions and then explaining like, this is how I feel.
Yeah. Yeah.
They also have a hard time in some social situations where they might feel overwhelmed.
Right. Right.
And then not realizing like how a conversation naturally flows and like how to take a turn in speaking.
Yeah.
And then personal space.
Yeah. 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 That makes sense too.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's such an interesting, sort of, cognitive thing. It's really interesting when you interact with somebody who has autism.
Yeah. And the fact that like, you know, we've talked about it before, but like the brain is this crazy lump that nobody understands.
Yeah.
Fully.
Yeah. I mean,
we're all walking around.
Right. Well, how much did you say? You said the other day, how much of it do we use, like 10% or something crazy like that?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, man.
Some of us use less.
Some of us do.
Boom.
Some of us do use less. Shout out to you stupid people.
Please sponsor our podcast.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's really interesting.
Yeah. And then there's something like I've seen this thing that, it's a meme on the internet and then, you know, conversations about it. And the meme itself is rather crude.
Uh-huh.
So I won't talk about
that. Yeah,
but,
you
know, the idea that vaccines cause autism was a big, big issue. Right.
Right.
So it became this huge news thing. And like Lucine talked about how like the stance for her for Lumen Academy, we've talked about like, no, you know, it's not so much that the vaccines are causing autism. It's just that timing too.
Yeah. I liked that. I liked that kind of, of stance on it. That was interesting.
Yeah. Like your kid is developing. Mm-hmm. So at two, you
when
have to go through
when they're like poking them with everything.
Yeah. And you have to go through that whole vaccine thing. if you don't know that, okay, well, maybe there's something happening inside my child's brain that I've never seen before. It's got nothing to do with the vaccine.
Yeah, it's like when people say, well, I don't get the flu shot because like a week later I get the flu. And you're like, well, no, you probably had a cold or the flu before you got the flu shot. Flu shot is just the dead flu.
Yeah.
You know, I really actually thought her kind of description of it has really made a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, you're not, I mean, you're not really, especially if you're a newer parent, you're not really like aware of like the differences.
Oh yeah, like a first time parent,
right?
I'm like sure you'd just be like, what is happening?
You're not aware of the differences yet, you know? And then, you know, it's a matter of timing, right?
Yeah.
So you have these vaccines that happen, and then all of a sudden you notice these differences. It could be that their autism reacted to what was in their bodies, not that all of a sudden this vaccine created autism.
Yeah, and like there's this whole idea that kind of blew my mind when it came to this meme and this discussion was that, sure, there are more diagnoses of autism in our country, in the world, right?
Yeah.
But it might not be so much that there's just more cases of autism. It's that we're now recognizing this.
Yeah.
There's always been autistic people, but they weren't always treated as like, oh, you have a neurological disorder. Let's talk about
that's
it. Let's figure out what to do.
I think that's the main thing.
Yeah.
I think it's just,
it's always been there.
Right. It's always been there. She talked about it.
Albert Einstein, right?
Yeah. It's always been there.
Yeah.
And just today we have the ability to label it better so that we can deal with it better.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So that's really interesting.
Yeah. So that's the way it is with some things where it's just like, you know, like the whole transgender people using bathrooms. Guess what? Transgender people have been going to the bathroom since they've been born.
I think so.
Yeah. Pretty sure. You know, so like it's the same with autism. Like if you are autistic and you were born in 1870, you still are autistic.
You were autistic then.
Yeah. You're still there.
Yeah. Yeah. That's I thought that was really cool. That was a very interesting way that she kind of crafted that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it was a great conversation. She definitely very inspirational stuff to like do this because of her daughter, which was really neat. So kind of hit on some upcoming events or events that just happened. We just wrapped up Well Fed, Well Read, both in Olympia and Spokane. Thank you to everyone who participated. We will have numbers and awards handed out as we begin to put everything together and interact with charities about what was donated. But just another amazing promotion. One of the first that we do all year.
Yeah.
And it has become wildly popular.
Yeah, it gets bigger every year.
It
so
sure
next
does.
Year, three places we're hoping for.
That's right.
Yeah,
three counties we're hoping for. And then, of course, we are getting we're inching closer and closer to the Leadership Breakfast on May 9th. It's going to be at the Skookum Creek Event Center at the Little Creek Resort and Casino in Shelton from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. Doors open at 7:30. We have some amazing special guests lined up. The theme is game night, so we'll have some fun games there. We'll also have a really amazing traveling display by the folks from Medical Teams International. And hopefully, fingers crossed, some animals.
Some dogs.
We think we're working on that right now. Yes, I know. Lucas is ready.
Yep.
So that's coming up. And then, of course, that's also PSRW Week. And just a reminder, come on out to our booth, weather pending. Take on the program manager and pop a shot.
You should make some certificates.
I think I will.
Yeah.
I think I'm going to have to.
If they defeat you.
That's right. Okay. I'm going to have Jerrica like create a whole like flyer with just me like shooting around. I think
you're going to have to mean mug it on the flyer.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Get a headband the whole nine. So that'll be happening also actually that same week. May 8th is when we're done at the Olympia event. So we want to thank Lucine again for coming on the show. Thank you for listening. Remember to rate and review us in the iTunes if that's how you get a listen for us, and we will talk to you next week.
Bye.